I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen up, you motherfuckers.
Politics. Politics. Humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Bart Cop Radio, show number 106. Heard on the Bart Cop Radio networks, seen on BartCop.com. My name is Bart. I'll be driving the tractor on today's hayride, and we got lots of show for you today. I got so much show for you today, we're going to have to leave parts of it out. Whatever don't make it in this show, make it in the next show. It's almost done. But what's scheduled to be in this show, we got some Hillary Obama talk. I know how you love the Hillary Obama talk. And as always, I'm very fair. Oh, totally. What is Barcopism but fairness? Next, we got something that everybody's been waiting so long for. It's been maybe a year, maybe longer. We got a pig boy beat down. The pig boy thinks it's okay if 3,100 soldiers are dead in Iraq. He says that's not a problem because there's people dying in America's cities too. And what's the difference if they die here or over there? We're going to tear him a new orifice. And that's a Nancy Grace guarantee. We also got a trip report as required by the IRS. Got a little talk about gay rehab, which I'm not sure I understand. But as always, I'm going to clarify everything. We're going to make it all work. Today's shot of Chinoco is provided by Pat RT. Oh, that was a big one. Didn't anticipate. But already we got too much for the big, big show. Better get right to it. Boom.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Let's talk a little bit about Barack Obama, who I like. I don't know when you're going to hear this, but recently on 60 Minutes, they did a thing on him, and I just saw a piece of it. But I really liked what I saw. They asked him a bunch of the dumb, stupid questions like the whore press is supposed to do. And basically, he looked at the guy like, you idiot. And then he would laugh. And then he would give a pretty good answer, which is the right way to do that because it tells the smarter people watching the TV he wanted to smack the guy, but he knows he can't do that and be president. Another thing, who was it? The prime minister of Australia attacked Obama and said, oh, if you want to help Al-Qaeda, be sure to elect Obama. If Prime Minister Howard truly believes what he says, perhaps this country should find its way to contribute more than just 1,400 troops so some American troops can come home. It's easy to tough talk when it's not your country or your troops making the sacrifice. That was excellently done. It also reminds me of our little poker excerpt from the last issue, that I hear you talking, but until you push some money into the pot, you're just a bozo with flapping gums. But if Howard were to send 20,000 soldiers to Iraq, well, that doesn't mean he's right, but at least then he's putting his troops where his mouth is. Because anybody can say anything if there's no consequences when you're wrong. Got a couple things for you from the new Rolling Stone. Oh, and then you're not going to like my comment on it at all. Oh, my gosh, you're going to be so mad. Rolling Stone says, strategy assessment, can Obama win? Barack Obama certainly has no trouble connecting with voters, and his mass appeal will enable him to raise enough campaign cash to keep up with Hillary Clinton. Boy, that, I think, is what we call optimistic. The Clintons have a political machine going back 15 years. Obama's been in the Senate, in the national spotlight, 2 years. I just don't know that those things are equal. So does he actually stand a chance of winning the Democratic nomination? Although the primaries are still a year away, political insiders say there are several things Obama must do to emerge from the crowded field with contenders. Number one, move beyond hope. Being a fresh face isn't enough. Obama's got to order specifics that differentiate him from the anti-poverty populism of John Edwards and the pragmatic centrism of Clinton. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, flag. You cannot call Hillary a pragmatic centrist. No, no, no. She's Bush's more evil twin. She's Bush's clone. She's so far to the right, they can't even see the center. She's fallen off the right edge. Oh, she's such a right winger. Hillary, the hawkish right winger. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And Rolling Stone has the nerve to call her a pragmatic centrist. Obama's got to do something to back up the idea that he represents something completely different, says Joe Trippi, who ought to know what he's talking about. He was Howard Dean's campaign manager in 2004. Be the commander, is number two suggesting. The best thing, oh, I love this, the best thing that could happen to Obama is the swift boat-like smear campaign that would enable him to demonstrate toughness under fire. It's important that the voters see how he reacts to a real crisis. Whether he's got the medal for the job, says Larry Sabato, who I don't like, a political scientist at the University of Virginia. And that is good. Hopefully they'll put him through, not that I dislike Obama, but he needs to be tested before he says I take the oath. Let's find out if our guy can pitch before we put him in the bottom of the ninth of the World Series. And so, yeah, that would be kind of cool. Let the swift boaters go after him, and then let's see how he reacts. If he slaps them down like a Clinton, hey, he could be our guy. He must own the black vote. Half or two-thirds won't cut it. Obama has to win at least 3 out of 4 African-American ballots. No easy feat in a hotly contested race. Last I heard, the blacks were breaking maybe 70-30, something like that, for Clinton. Not to say that Obama can't overcome that, but he's got to do... Someone said, damn, I heard this recently. Someone said that it's pretty much an insult to think that all you got to do is put a black face up there and every black person is going to all of a sudden change their vote overnight. That is kind of insulting, I think. Number 4, keep the race alive. With John Edwards ahead in Iowa and Clinton looking strong in New Hampshire, Obama's got to make it to the primaries in California, New Jersey, and Florida. You know, I heard someone say, I think it was on the McLaughlin Report, that the first primary is actually March 31st this year. I mean, it's not really, but the point is on March 31st, all the candidates have to declare to the Federal Election Commission how much money they have. And if Hillary comes out with $1.25 and everybody else has got 20 or 30 or 10, gee, I don't know. Who's going to give money to a guy with $10 million when the front runner's got $120 million? It's just going to be a little hard to raise money. Again, calling it a horse race, if one horse is already around the turn and your other guy's trying to get up some steam on the stretch, I don't know my horse racing terms, but you know what I mean. Okay, now here's the part you're not going to like. There are limitations to this view of the world, of course, Obama's view, and there are those who believe that for all his study, Obama has been too cautious on the big issues. When he was running for the Senate, Obama was an early and vocal opponent of the war in Iraq. Quote, I think our foreign policy has been all bluster and saber-rattling and continued mistakes over the last several years, he says, but since he arrived in the Senate, many of those who hoped Obama would become a great liberal champion have been disappointed. He has voted with conservatives on tort reform and industry-friendly provisions in the bankruptcy bill and the troop pullout bill he introduced in January was a late and unremarkable entry into the debate over Iraq. Those of us in the Chicago progressive community still believe in Barack Obama, says Joel Blyfus, editor of the Left Wing In These Times, but at the moment we're pretty much taking it on faith. So maybe Obama did what they accuse Hillary of. Maybe he voted with the man a few times to kind of get his bona fides built up. You know, and you have to understand, I'm with you on the liberal end of this thing, but if you show up, you know, all Maxine Waters and Cynthia McKinney, your first day on the job, you're not going to be taken seriously. You can't even be Howard Dean your first day on the job. Howard Dean gets to say some of the things he says because he's the chairman of the DNC and a former Democratic frontrunner. He's got some bona fides. Where if he says something, it's not, oh, that idiot. Of course, the right will always call him that because they fear him. But you can't show up with a radical idea the first day and start screaming with your hair on fire. So I think it might have been a wise move of Obama to take a more cautionary move on his first few votes. Because if he shows up the first day on the job, stop the war, then all of a sudden he's the crazy man from Illinois that nobody takes seriously. And everybody disagrees, oh, if he just needs to take a stand on principle. Well, you can't do that if you're a laughing stock. Which reminds me of a story. You remember in Blazing Saddles? I'm going about this backwards. There was at one point where they're trying to get enough workers to get on the railroad. And the big old fat guy, his name's David Huddleston in real life. But he was doing the negotiating about who could work on the railroad and who couldn't. And he said, tell you what. Now, this is a little politically incorrect. This is Blazing Saddles, written by Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks. He says, tell you what, we'll take the niggers and the chinks, but not the Irish. And I thought it was a fantastically good line, because here's this white guy. He'll accept the blacks and the Chinese, but he didn't want to have anything to do with the Irish that looks just like him. His name's Huddleston. That sounds Irish to me. So I thought it was funny you differentiate your racism, your prejudice, along those illogical lines. Then there's a story about when me and Mrs. Bart were back in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Fayetteville, Arkansas is probably 100 miles, maybe 110 miles from Tulsa. And there's a little lake outside of Fayetteville called Lake Weddington, probably probably 15 miles away from town. So what we would do, we would go to her roommate. She had a really hot, it was a nice little Camaro. And we would say, can we borrow your car and go to Tulsa? And she'd say, no, that's much too far. It's a couple hundred miles there and back. No, I'm just not comfortable with that. And then we'd say, well, can we borrow your car and go out to the lake? That's 15 miles. She'd say, well, okay, that's reasonable. And that's all we ever wanted in the first place, would go to the damn lake. But when you, it's a negotiating trick. If you need 20 bucks, you ask for 100. And they say, don't be stupid. You say, well, you know, 20 is reasonable, but don't be stupid with 100. What if that's what we got here? What we have is the two big questions of 08. Is America ready for a woman president? Is America ready for a black president? There aren't enough blacks to get Obama elected just on the black vote. But guess what the biggest demographic of all demographics is in the United States? That's female voters. There are more female voters than any other demographic in the United States. So by asking, are you ready for a woman or a black president? I'm thinking, what if, this is just a wild idea, what if Obama is in on the fix with Hillary? Think about that for a second. That doesn't make anybody bad. They might be guilty of good planning. They might be guilty of well-thought-out strategery. But what if that's the big ticket? What if they say, is America ready for a black? Is America ready for a woman? I think a lot of people, especially in the South, are going to think, well, no black guy, that's for sure. Now, the woman we can talk about. This is the same thing with the Tulsa and the lake. You ask about the black guy, and they say, oh, I don't know about a black president. I don't know. Oh, no. That's going a little too far. The woman, we can probably talk about, but I don't know about the black guy. I just don't think we're ready for that, which isn't necessarily a racist thing. It's if America's not ready for a black president, they're not ready. It's not a racial thing to assess the situation. If the German tank is a better tank than the American tank, you're not a traitor to say so, although the Republicans will say you are. So what if that's what we have here? What if Obama is in the race with Hillary as kind of a false opponent? When you see the giant Clinton machine crunching up opponents, and you see the magic of Obama, who's, you know, the sparkle and the energy and the enthusiasm, and the people lay down in front of a train for Obama. You know, you get those two going. You get your Bidens, you got your Edwards, you got your Richardsons, you got all these Vilsacks, the people who are certainly not going to be president. They're looking at these two and saying, oh, geez, I don't know. But I think, and I've always said, that Obama is not ready. I think Obama knows that he's not ready. But by making this charge, he got in the race last Saturday. He will forever, the rest of his life, be former presidential candidate Barack Obama. And by getting in early, he's chasing out, I think, the lesser contenders. For sure, there's only going to be two or three people left in this race come April 1st, because March 31st is the big primary. Who is going to look at $100 million and say, I can raise that? Yeah, Mr. Vilsack, you sure can. Sorry, I don't mean to. If Vilsack's your man, I don't mean to laugh, but the Clinton machine, the Obama magic against Vilsack, please. What I think Obama's doing, he's not selling out. He's not helping Whitey at black people's expense. I think by running this race, by pretending, by making a stab at running for president, I think he's getting a civil rights first down. He's not scoring the touchdown. America's not ready for the touchdown yet. We're not ready, perhaps. This isn't me talking. This is America. Perhaps America isn't ready for a black president. But they probably are ready for a woman president. Like Bill spelled out a couple shows back, England's had one, India's had one, Israel's had one. Lots of places have had female presidents or prime ministers, whatever, and they all survived. And here's America, the shining beacon on the hill bullshit, and we can't have a woman because, no, women are stupid. See, that's going to make us look bad. So I think they're going to make the case that it's time for a woman. It's almost time for the black man, but it's definitely time for the woman. And Obama vice president? No, I don't think so. I think we need a pit bull for the vice president. Don't know who that is at this moment. I kind of like the idea of Wesley Clark, but that's, I tend to be single-minded in my candidate sometimes. But if Obama can get Hillary elected, are we talking about Secretary of State Obama? Are we talking about, I don't know, Ambassador to the UN Obama? He could be, or maybe he's just the most powerful Democrat in the Senate Obama. But that's the part that I thought was going to make you mad, that what if Obama is not Hillary's enemy. What if he's working with Hillary in the stealth campaign to chase the others out? Because you look at her, you look at him, who's the idiot going to be the third guy trying to raise money against them? I don't think it's going to happen. But if Obama can score the civil rights first down, get Hillary elected president, maybe he could be the civil rights touchdown in 2016. A lot of really stupid things going on in the media these days. I'd like to mention one of them, and no, it's not Anna Nicole Smith. Talked about her years and years ago. I said she should get her share of that old man's money. If they'd have paid attention to me, they could have given her whatever, $100 million, said go away, goodbye, and they'd have been done with it. And the fella who was who's considered the rightful heir would have only had $1.3 billion. But no. Nobody ever wants to do it logically and get it over with. They want to drag it out to the end of the time. But what I want to talk about is this Isaiah Washington again. And no, that doesn't mean we're going to talk about TV or Grey's Anatomy or Desperate Housewives or any of that. But I must comment on him because he used apparently the F word, F meaning fag or faggot. And I don't know if he used it in anger or if it slipped out accidentally, which I understand it can do. I don't know which of those happen. But the stupid thing is they put the man in rehab. Is that not crazy? How in the hell is putting him in rehab going to solve whatever problem he's got? And if it slipped out, I mean, hasn't everyone... When I worked for the pool table and jukebox guy, I collected maybe 100 different locations. Collected meaning the money out of the pinball machine, the jukebox, the pool table, whatever. And on that route, there was two gay bars. And boy, you walk into a gay bar and you hear the F word all day up and down. A little bit like going into a black club and you're going to hear, you know, nigger, get me a drink. Nigger, you're in my chair. It's the way things are. I can't stop it. You can't stop it. That's the way things are in some clubs, in some places. So anyway, they send this guy to rehab, which is just crazy. He doesn't need rehab. What he needs is 5 minutes with old Bart. I can straighten this guy out in 5 minutes if he needs straightening out. We don't know that he does. But if he does, here's what I'd do. First, I'd have a little research, but I'd send him down, and I would give him a list of some of the great gay people that are with us now or that have been with us throughout time. It's a long list. It's a damn impressive list. People like Michelangelo, gee, should he be snuffed out because he was a little on the gay side? So that'd be number one. I'd give him a list of the great gay people of our times. Number two, I would explain to him that although it can't be explained to the satisfaction of the religiously insane, science strongly suggests that the problem is genetic. Not the problem. The situation is genetic. In previous shows, we talked about for every older brother you have, your odds go up, I think it's 15%, that you will be gay. So if you've got 7 or 8 older brothers, you're kind of... not gay for sure, but your odds are really leaning towards that. And once you have number one, which is the great gay people of our time, and number two, the logic and the science behind the medical aspect of it, then you look at the guy and say, dude, guess what? You're black. If you accept number two, that science says it's not that fellow's fault that he's gay, well, then aren't you going to promote the idea that it's not your fault that you're black? Assuming that one thinks it's a fault to be black, but the point is, being black and gay is seen by some or most as a disadvantage in the world. And for a black guy to be discriminatory against a gay guy is just the height of stupidity. The first nightclub I ever owned, I inherited this biker bar. And I thought it was so odd. The bikers would come in and they start screaming about them stupid niggers. I'm thinking, well, wait, just a minute ago, you were whining about being discriminated against. These guys, they would go in a club, let's say a TGI Fridays or one of those kind of clubs, and they would be denied entry because they had on their, you know, their leather gear and their chaps and their goggles and their leather helmet or cap and, you know, all this stuff. And they would be denied service. They'd say, sorry, we have a dress code. And they walk out thinking, well, I'm being discriminated against. This is terrible. In today's day and age, you discriminate me just because I'm a biker. And I thought, well, you wake up and add things to your body in order to telegraph to the other person that you are a minority. If you're a biker, when you get out of bed in the morning, nobody knows you're a biker until you do something. It's like two girls sitting on a park bench. They're not lesbians unless they're kissing. If they're just two girls sitting on a bus or somewhere, well, they're not two lesbians. Those are two girls. When they start kissing, they put their hands in each other's pants. Now they're lesbians. But that's my point with the bikers. When you put on the leather and the chaps and the goggles and all that, then you become he who is discriminated against. If you would accept the fact that a black man can't peel off his skin and be white long enough to go to a fancy restaurant or whatever, why can't you grant the gay fella the same respect that if medical science is correct that he didn't choose his lifestyle, then why would you want to discriminate against the guy because of the way he was born? Isn't that the nuttiest thing in the world for a black person to discriminate against somebody because of an inherited gene when they themselves are discriminated against because of an inherited gene? So there you go. 5 minutes. Problem solved. Case over. This guy doesn't need to be in rehab. Whatever they're going to do in rehab, it's going to be what I just did. And they're going to take 3 weeks or 6 weeks or something instead of 5 damn minutes because it's to everybody's advantage to drag this out. If he accidentally used the F word, I don't think he should be fired. If he insists on using it again and again, now we need to let him go. But also, if he says, well, I can't help it that I'm black, but he's a fag and he knows it. Well, yeah, now you probably need to be fired. If you reject the logic that if you're born with something, you shouldn't be discriminated against for that, then yeah, maybe he's too stupid to be in show business. But that was probably the nuttiest thing that has come up lately as far as hypocrisy or whatever, to send this guy to rehab so he'll stop using the F word. That's stupid, and we don't like stupidity.
You see, it's a massive government conspiracy, or have they gotten to you too?
You are listening to Bart Cop Radio at bartcop.com.
Now and then we kick around the marijuana question, and I saw something in the paper that was just so stupid I had to mention it. It's on the front page of the life section of the U.S. Whore Today. Big, giant, probably 7 inches by 9 inches, giant picture right in the middle, above the fold, big marijuana leaf, and it says, caution, marijuana may not be lesser evil, which is real stupid because I don't remember anybody saying it was. Gateway drug or not, experts say it's not a benign path for teens. Again, who said it was? A drug is a thing that affects your body. It can affect it for good or for bad, but its definition is that it's a thing that affects your body. So I think it's pretty safe to say there are no safe drugs in the entire planet. Aspirin can kill you. Anything can kill you. Any drug can kill you. Hell, water can kill you if you drink enough of it. We had a lady on, went to some radio station, drank too much water for some stupid drink of water contest, and she died. Anything can kill you if you do enough of it. So why is U.S. Whore Today making this argument that, oh, for those of you who say 5-year-olds should smoke all day, nah, that's a bad on you. Well, nobody said that, you stupid cow. Okay, here we go. You're going to know the weird sentence when you hear it. Tyreal Gardner first smoked marijuana when he was 13. He liked what it felt like. By the age of 15, he was smoking pot every week. He supported his habit with the money his parents gave him for getting straight A's on his report card. They didn't have a clue. Oh, really? The habitual pot smoker got straight A's. Why is that factual information in the newspaper? I'm very surprised they let that go through. You're not supposed to tell the truth about drugs. Now, I'm not saying all kids who smoke a lot of pot are going to get straight A's, but to stand there and say, if you smoke pot, you're going to flunk out. The kid thinks, well, Bobby at school, he gets straight A's, and he's my dealer. And he gets all A's. He's never got anything but an A. So my parents must be lying to me. My teachers are lying to me. The police are lying to me. The government is lying to me. Everybody is lying to me because I know for a fact what's true, and they're trying to sell me some bullshit for whatever unknown reason, probably so I'll Grew up and drink a bunch of taxable whiskey instead of some non-taxable marijuana, but that's crazy business. By 16, when I got my license, it turned into a fairly everyday thing, says Gardner, now 24. I believe it is very addictive, especially for people with addictive personalities. Well, gee. Well, so's the number 4, and so's the letter B. The idea that something is addictive, if you're an addictive personality, don't be stupid. You can be addicted to any damn thing. Millions of baby boomers might disagree. After all, they smoked marijuana, the country's most popular illicit drug, in their youth and quit with little effort. Oh, did they? But studies have shown that when regular pot smokers quit, they do experience withdrawal symptoms, a characteristic used to predict addictiveness. Most users of more addictive drugs, such as cocaine or heroin, started with marijuana, scientists say, and the earlier they started, the greater their risk of becoming addicted. Horse hockey. The idea that people who stop smoking experience withdrawal symptoms. I don't believe it. It's another lie. Why are they lying to us? Why can't they tell us the damn truth? If you've been reading more than a year, you know in 2000, maybe 5, a good friend sent me and Mrs. Bart to Hawaii. His name's Don Ho, and he's a nice guy. He lives in San Francisco. And I didn't want to take anything to Hawaii because I didn't know how things worked. I'd never been overseas before, and I didn't know how the customs stuff worked, so I didn't take anything. And we were there a week, and I wanted some, but it wasn't like I'm sitting there flip-flopping on the bed, gotta have some. That didn't happen. I just wanted some. But isn't that kind of dumb? Hell, if when the X-Files went off, did we undergo X-Files withdrawal? Yeah, probably. Does that mean X-Files is illegal? No, it's just something we liked, and we wanted some more of it. Hell, you go out with a pretty girl at the end of the night, you withdraw. You want some more of that. But you can't have it. You think, oh, darn, I sure would like some more of that. It'd be nice. Sure wish I could do some of that again. Well, that's what they're talking about here, addiction. Liars. And most users of more addictive drugs, such as more addictive drugs. Yeah, cocaine, heroin, and pot. They're all in the same group, but pot is a little bit less addictive than the cocaine and heroin. Scientists say, and the earlier they started, the greater the risk of becoming. No, that's just goofy. They say they started with marijuana and went on to cocaine and heroin. You know, I'll bet before they did that, I'll bet before marijuana, I'll bet they smoked cigarettes. Now, if you want to make the argument that cigarettes turn you on to drugs, that might be because cigarettes have an addictive, actual physical, I can't help myself, I got to have a cigarette, I know it's going to kill me, but I got to have a cigarette. That's what you call an addiction. But cigarettes are legal because the sons of bitches pay bribes to Congress. It's not the dangerous qualities of pot that make it illegal. It's that the pot lobby hasn't given the senators and the representatives as much money as the cancer lobby has. And everybody knows it. I'm not breaking any new ground here. Many studies have documented. Oh, the other thing about pot being the gateway drug. I'll bet you 99.99% of all heroin users tried chocolate before they tried heroin. And I'll bet they also tried milk. So wouldn't it follow then that chocolate and milk are both gateway drugs to heroin? Shouldn't we outlaw chocolate and milk to keep our kids away from heroin? It's pretty obvious. You can make up any bullshit you want if you force science to stay on the sidelines. If you say, no, science, you stay over there. We're having a talk about bullshit here, so you stay away, science. That's what we got with the pot laws. I think it's a shame. Many studies have documented a link between smoking marijuana and later use of harder drugs such as heroin and cocaine. Objection! Many studies. Where are these studies? Name the studies. Who did the studies? Were they financed by the right-wing crazy people, the religiously insane nut jobs? But that doesn't necessarily mean marijuana causes addiction and harder drugs. Oh, so there's a chance that it doesn't do it. But when you're dealing with the lives of your kids, the health of your kids, why take a chance? Why look at science and logic when you can look at scare tactics instead? Is marijuana a gateway drug? The question has been debated since the time it was in college in the 60s, says Harvard University handjob Harrison Pope, director of the Biological Psychiatry Laboratory at Boston's McLean Hospital. There's just no way scientifically to end that argument one way or the other. Well, that means, that means you can't provide a link. Don't give me that. If you can't provide a link, that means there appears to be no link. Lying bastard. I would bet you that people who start smoking marijuana earlier are more likely to get into using other drugs. Well, now that may be. That is possible. These are probably the same people that climb mountains. Remember we had that argument a couple weeks back. If you're the type of guy that would want to put on some gear and go climb a damn 3-mile high mountain in December, Yeah. How scared of a joint are you going to be? You're probably not going to be. Anyway, we could go all day, and I just thought it was extra stupid that they're trying to tell us how bad marijuana is, and they're using this kid with the straight A's as an example. It'd be nice if they could knock off the lies and just tell the damn truth, but they can't because there's more money in lies. Just ask Fox News.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town again.
Okay, now at this point, the IRS has a gun to my head, and they're forcing me to tell you about my trip. The trip reports can be deducted as an expense if I feature them on the page or on the radio show. So, to keep the IRS happy, I must tell you about my trip with Mrs. Bart to Arizona. For reasons that'll have to come out later, we scheduled a 6:30 flight. Oh my God, 6:30 in the morning? That means we had to be there, say, 5 o'clock. And since we were parking the car in one of those weird self-parky things where you wait for the shuttle, that meant more like 4:30. So we had to leave the house like at 4. 4 in the morning is a tough time for me. So I got up probably 3:30. She got up probably 2:30. And I'll tell you, it's hard to drink whiskey and vodka all evening and then get up at 2 or 3:30, go to the damn airport. So we get there, plane takes off 6:30, we're heading to Phoenix. Well, then at Phoenix, probably 8:30 somewhere. And I got to tell you, my old buddy Eddie the Pillar came to see me about a month ago. He was in town, so he said, Bart, let's go do some tequila, and it's hard to turn that down when a pillar calls. He showed up in a Solera, I think is what it's called. It's a two-door Camry. I don't know why it can't be a two-door Camry, but a Camry has four doors, and if you weld two of the doors shut, it becomes a Solera. And I asked him where he got it, and he said, Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And I thought, okay, cool. Next time we go out, I'll check with Enterprise and see what kind of fancy car I can get. I booked me online. I booked a premium or a full-size. I forget what they call that. We land in Phoenix. We get our luggage, and we take the shuttle bus to the Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And the sons of bitches, they always do this. They always say, oh, we'll get you a car like this or like that. And you say, oh, okay, cool. And you sign up. When I got there, I said, well, I said, can I have the Solera? And they said, let me look. Oh, no, don't have one. I said, what else you got? Well, we said we got the Nissan Maximum. I said, oh, Nissan Maximum. That's a badass car, 265 horses. I'll take one of those, sure. He said, I don't have one. I said, well, what do you have? And he picks up the phone. He calls downstairs. And I say, there's no answer. He said, well, tell you what. Just take your little contract down there and see what they got. And that's when we get down there. Then he tells us, well, we got a piece of shit Buick and a giant 40-foot Nissan truck. Perfect. If you're ever looking to rent a car, don't call Enterprise. All they had left was a piece of shit Buick with 23,000 miles on it and a Nissan Xterra, which, as you know, is a 40-foot truck. So I'm a little leery of the American cars, especially traveling in the mountains. We're in the mountains. We're in the desert. You know, you just don't need a breakdown when you're in the mountains in the desert. So I said, fine, give me the Nissan Xterra. Because trust me, nothing Mrs. Bart likes more than bouncing around in a damn truck for a few hours after a three-hour flight. So we, and then as I'm signing up for the thing, he says, so do you want to bring it back empty or full, or how do you want to do the gas? And I always bring it back empty, because I can do that pretty well. I'm not the type of guy that's going to put $20 worth of gas in a car if it's an hour before the plane takes off. So I started to say, I'll bring it back empty. He said, well, now, hey, we're charging you $2.05 for a gallon. Around here, it's $2.30, $2.40 for a gallon of gas. So you can save money if you pre-buy it now. I'm going, well, look, that sounds like a hand job. But, hey, I'm a busy man. I got shit to do. I don't have time to haggle over 30 cents. So, fine. Let's just do it that way. And I said, I'll bring it back with a half a tank. He says, okay. So then we go downstairs to pick up our fancy whatever it is car. And all they have is the two pieces of crap. So when the guy showed me the two pieces of crap, he says, so you're going to bring it back with the tank full, huh? I said, no. I told the guy half a tank, so he writes half a tank on the contract. So that's now the second little bit of discrepancy we've had on that. And just sidebar, jump it to the end. When I bring the car back, busy, late, I sign the thing, and when I get back here to home, I see the ticket. They, sons of bitches, they charge me for a full tank of gas. You know, I'm always complaining about American business. It's not that I'm against America or making money or making a profit or a company making a profit, but the entire point of American business is to screw the customer. And if you get caught, say, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, silly me. I checked the wrong. What's wrong with me? Where's my head today? But that's what they did to me, like they always effing do every time. Everybody you deal with is going to steal your money. And then when you catch them, they say, oh, my bad. Sorry. So anyway, I called them just now and said, you sons of bitches, you charged me for 10 gallons of gas at whatever, 2 1/4, whatever the lie was. Would you please take that off? So now they're going to put $28 credit back in my credit card. You sons of bitches, just deal honestly with me. Is it too much to ask? Okay, so this guy, and he's one of those super, the guy checking us out into the car, he's one of those super helpful guys. It's like, dude, I don't need a whole bunch of sugar. I don't need a lot of entertainment. Let's get through this. Boom, boom, boom. Let's go. We want to sign the thing and be gone. He walks me around the car. he walks me around this 40-foot truck, you know, checking for scratches. Like, I think what the some bitch is going to do is hire some kid to come scratch up the truck. And then we bring back, say, look here, we found a scratch, you bastards. So finally, we get away from them, and we're bouncing up the interstate there towards Sedona, Arizona. I called the same hotel we stayed at last time. Well, it's not a hotel. It's more like cabins in the woods. Called them and said, is our room ready? They said, sure is, Mr. Bart. So we said, fine, we'll come up there. If you remember, this was about a year ago. You might remember the story where the mice were running in and out of the fireplace. What's a lot of fun is to have a few drinks and play with fire. I love to have a few drinks and play with fire and play with water. Those are two fun things. So anyway, you know, we got this little Sears pretend fireplace here at Casa de Bart. But this is a real manly out in the woods and the cabin in the woods kind of fireplace. And so, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. In this place, though, they got a big sign, no smoking. $250 fine if we think you might have smoked something in our room. It's like, hey, dude, when we go out of town, don't ask me to be smoke-free. What, am I crazy? And they say, $250 fine if we think we might, because we got to bring in the Stanley Steamer people and do the walls and do the flooring, yada, yada, yada. Hand job. They got a damn fireplace in the room. They don't mind 15 oak logs burning, but God forbid somebody light something else. Now we got a crime on our hands. So we fooled them. We'll just put it that way. But the bad news, we get there and there's construction going on outside. Now here's, you know, part of the story I can't tell you. Things have been rough lately, so we wanted a calm little place in the woods, a place where Mrs. Bark can kind of decompress and, you know, get a little wind in her face, a little nature, some chirping birds kind of stuff. We get there and there's construction out the back door. You sons of bitches. They know that we're there to have, you know, it's a cabin in the damn woods. And they're building something right behind it. So the whole time we're sitting there, it's a nice place, cheap rates. But the whole time we're sitting there, beep, beep. We got trucks backing up. We got jackhammers. We got drilling. And I mean, oh, please. So I called up to the front gate and said, hey, this isn't working for us. We're supposed to stay 2 nights. What was it? We left Wednesday. We're going to stay Wednesday and Thursday, fly home Friday night. Said, dude, I can't stay here 2 nights. We're looking for some peace and quiet out in the woods. Here you got jackhammers and trucks backing up. What's wrong with you?
Oh, we're sorry.
But I'm getting ahead of myself again. Damn, I hate when I do that. If I had more time, if I had a staff, you know, I could put together like a little grid, like an outline of the story, the beginning, the middle, the end. But no, no time for that. While we're running around Sedona, Sedona is one of those weird places where you can go there if you're dead broke and if you want to spend $50,000 a day. It's weird. You bump into these people. You should see the Aston Martins and all this. My God, they're so decadent in that state. Sedona and Scottsdale were the two places we were at. Decadent? Oh, my God. I kept seeing Mercedes. I've never seen Mercedes look like that before. These Aston Martins, I got to where I could tell them from across the street. And all these BMWs, I've never seen a BMW look like that before. We're talking about the crazy, crazy rich. So anyway, we're running around town trying to think of something to do. Oh, and since we're in this giant Jeep, we figure we'll go trailing. You know, they got little trails, which are basically just unpaved roads and stuff. So we figure we'll go tooling around on the old trails. Well, the minute we get on the damn trail, this piece of crap Nissan, the tire pressure light comes on the dashboard. Now, you know, if we're in town, that's one thing, but I'm not real good at changing tires in town. I'll be damned if I'm going to get out in some desert on a hill and screw with the tires. So that made us be do we did less spelunking than we thought we were going to do. So we're running around, and we asked this lady, where's a good place to get some Mexican food? She says, oh, trust me, go to Javelina Cantina. Now, it looks like Javelina, but actually it's Javelina, because we're Mexican food. And apparently, wild guess, Javelina is Spanish for pig or pork or something. But there's pigs everywhere. We went in there, yeah. Oh, greatest margaritas ever, you know how you hear that. We go in there, sit down, 2 o'clock, try to get a room with the view, but no. I mean, a table with a view, can't do that, no, asking too much. Place is empty, but no, we can't sit in the place that has a view. She gets her margarita. They got a tequila list, and I'm looking at the tequila list, and it's like, okay, it's decent prices, which is kind of scary in a place like Sedona. But I look over the next table, and this guy's got a shot glass there. It's like, is there a God? This shot glass could have been, it was a brandy snifter, and the thing is so big, it's the kind you have to, well, it's radio, you can't see, but you have to put the stem of the glass between your FU finger and your ring finger to even pick it up, because it's huge. It's just, it could have been 20 ounces, I don't know. But it was this giant brandy snifter, had a good inch of tequila or whatever this guy was drinking it. So I said, ooh, bring me a shot of that. I'll bet you that was between 3 and 4 ounces, swear to God, of supreme fine luxury tequila. And it was like $9 or something. I was, hey, I'm always driving when I run into these bargains. We went to Aspen, went to the Hard Rock in Aspen, and Mrs. Bart got a shot of Corlejo, and they said it'll be $3, and you get to keep the glass. And I'm going, oh, geez, I'm going to drive. Why can't you have a bargain like that when I'm stuck in a hotel? So anyway, so he brings me out the this giant shot, and he brought Mrs. Bart a Corlejo margarita. She liked that. So anyway, then they bring the food. I always get the same thing. Every restaurant, every Mexican restaurant I've ever been in my life, I either get 2 beef enchiladas, rice and beans, or a beef and a cheese. So I ordered my beef enchilada, cheese enchilada, rice and beans. And when it came, the guy says, don't they get tired of saying the plate is hot? Anyway, cut into my beef enchilada, stuck it in my mouth, and oh my God. It was so cool because it was so unexpected, out of nowhere. I mean, they told us it was good food, but please, that's your brother-in-law or some guy who owes you money. So you steer me over there. Wasn't expecting this kind of good, but it was so cool. The second it hit my tongue, boom, it was just extremely good food. And you know what kills me? There's a place in Tulsa here. It's called Ted's Escondido something something. And we went there a while back. Same thing, ordered the same stuff, and I take a bite of the beef enchilada, and it's like, dude, how do you make the beef totally tasteless? How do you do that? You can go to the store and buy some ground beef and brown it and put some salt on it. That's got so much more flavor than what these idiots serve at the local restaurants here in Tulsa. And I don't understand that. How do you screw up ground beef? How do you get the flavor out of beef at a restaurant? But it was just the opposite at this Javelina Cantina, whatever it's called. One bite, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how good this is. Took a bite of that cheese enchilada again. How do they do it? Damn, this is good. So we sat there. We had us a fun time. So when we came back, as we were eating, we were talking about the bad situation with the hotel, and then we remembered, years ago, didn't we stay at that one place that had the really good view? And so we checked it out, and they're still open. $75. It's on top of the mountain where they have the airport in Sedona. Little hotel on top of the mountain. You look out over the entire valley there. It's spectacular. I'm going to put a picture on the page. Anyway, they got rooms for $75. Instead of staying at the place that had the construction, we're going to move to the new place with the view. Okay, that was Wednesday night. Something else must have happened. If it did, I'll come back and fill it in later. So Thursday, we move over to the hotel with the view. It's the Sky Ranch something in Sedona. If you ever go to Sedona, trust me, Sky Ranch. Really nice place to stay. Stayed there in the 80s, stayed there in the 90s. Here it is, 2007, staying there again. We wake up the next day. I said, what do you want to do today? She's going, Mexican food. I mean, that place was so good. We decided we had to eat there twice. So we went back there, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, nobody in the way. Got another thing of tequila. Got that same meal again. It was so good. I can't believe how good it is now. So we get back to the hotel, and Anna Nicole Smith has died. And oh, you, I guess if you own a computer or a radio or a TV, you know what happened, but it just kept going. It kept going. And then Zsa Zsa's husband shows up and says, yeah, I got her too. It's like, oh, please. This is turning into such a stupid circus. Okay, so that was Thursday night. Friday was the scary day. Head back to Scottsdale, where the Mayo Clinic is. So we get there, and they say, be there at 11:30. Being the gracious gentleman with much respect that I am, we get there at 11 o'clock. Get to 11 o'clock, and I give the information guy my little pamphlet there, and he says, you're in the wrong place. You're in Scottsdale. You're supposed to be at the Mayo in Phoenix. I said, well, thanks for telling me. The whole point of you sending these little itineraries out, maybe you could tell me what city I should be in. Maybe that's like one of the priorities. So we get over there. Everybody's real nice, very professional. Give them a little blood. They say, come back a couple hours. So here we are between Phoenix and Scottsdale in the really, really expensive part of town. It's between the Mayo Clinic and the biggest Mercedes dealership you ever saw. So between the Mayo and the Mercedes dealership, we saw a little restaurant called the White Chocolate something Cantina Grill, something like that. But it's either that or Bob's Fish House or, oh, they had a Subway, you know. Anyway, we decided to gamble on that. Super snooty. Again, you pull up to the front door, and there's Aston Martins all in the parking lot. It's like, I never saw the Aston Martin dealership there, but someone's doing a lot of business. And I don't know what Aston Martin costs. All I know about Aston Martin, I think James Bond drives one. Other than that, don't know a lot about Aston Martin. But they were everywhere. So, oh, we got out cheap. I got a French dip sandwich. We're in Scottsdale. They don't have a lot of Jack in the Boxes in Scottsdale. Back to meet Dr. Irvin Sloan. When you remember the last time we went, though, this doctor, he looks a whole lot like the evil genius, the evil madman on Alias. And I got to tell you, I was a little worried. No telling what the doctor was going to say when I went in there. You know, it's one of the scariest days I've had so far because, you know, I used to think scary was when you go to the dentist and he says, yeah, you're going to need that crown. I used to think that was scary. Well, we're in a whole new kind of scary now. So we get there and we go through all the preliminaries and I'm saying, hey, doc, let's get to the chase. Is it time to do something yet? And he said, no, no, don't think so. I'm going, oh, doc, let me kiss you, please. So after he said, okay, we're done here. Not much else to do. Hey, we was in a pretty good mood. Oh, here's another story I forgot to tell you. You remember the Tequila Fest, Poker Fest we had back in September? I made a little joke on the side about, let's all be sure and get together, because the last thing we want is for somebody to be marching back and forth on the floor of the Palms while the rest of us are upstairs partying. Oh my God, that happened. This fellow named Andrew. Oh, I should have found the email, but he sent me an email and said, Bart, plane fare to Las Vegas from Phoenix, $199, whatever it is. Lodging at the hotel, $100, $100, whatever it was. Then he said, missing the party, priceless. And I thought, well, damn, at least he's got a sense of humor. I got this email the night we got home from the party, September, whatever, 26, whatever it was. So I called him and said, dude, I'm real sorry. I just felt so bad for the guy. So I said, tell you what, we have to go to Phoenix. It's a good thing he's in Phoenix. If he's in Seattle, somewhere else, wouldn't have worked. So lucky, Andrew is this guy's name. He's in Phoenix. So I said, dude, we have to go to Phoenix once or twice a year. So next time we're in Phoenix, they'll call you. Me and you will do us a little private tequila fest on our own. He said, okay. So we get out of the doctor's office. We're in a good mood. Called Andrew. He's getting off work 4 o'clock. We agreed to meet at the Salty Margarita. It's on Scottsdale Road. So see, I can find it. Scottsdale Road in Scottsdale. This kind of thing. Hey, done well. Good thinking, Andrew. So we get there. And Ren and Andrew, nice guy, normal guy. We sit down, ordered a shot of Herradura Añejo, ordered a shot of Chinaco Añejo. And he had a beer in his hand. Apparently not a big, big tequila drinker, but, you know, he spent a lot of money. He told me when he went to the, I asked him how his trip ended up the weekend that he missed this. He said, well, for $550, I got some quesadillas. He had a pretty good sense of humor about the thing. Did a shot of the Herradura, shout out to Chinaco. We're kind of comparing them and telling stories and stuff. Then I noticed, corner of my eye, see they have some Casa Nobles. Haven't had some Casa Nobles Añejo in a long time. So we got a shot of that. So 3 shots. Hey, I'm driving. That's my limit. You know, we split the shot. So turned out we had a shot and a half each. And I'm apologizing to him again. I said, you know, I'm so sorry about that. And I said, but apparently you've really handled it well. I mean, if it was me, if I paid $500 to go somewhere and couldn't find a damn thing, you can imagine what kind of mood I'd be in. And he said, ah, nothing phases me anymore since my motorcycle accident. And I said, oh, what happened there? He said, well, had a really badass Honda 750 Goldwing, supercharged, water-cooled, something, drive aluminum shaft, something, apparently is a badass bike. He's tooling down the road, but he apparently came upon a car, we'll say. There was a sudden impact. He flew over the handlebars, over this car, oh my God, into the path of the 18-wheeler. Oh my God, the 18-wheeler ran over my new friend, Andrew. He lost one leg. The leg was gone to hell, but they were able to put a bunch of pins in it and all that. When I met him, you can't tell he was missing a leg. He just, unless you get under his pants cuffs, there's no reason for anybody to know anything. And he said, he said, I was kind of a drag. I was in the hospital for 53 days, and then I was in a wheelchair for, I guess, 6 months, and then I was on crutches for a year. And he said, once you've been through that, missing a tequila fest, not a really big thing. I thought, boy, that's a good attitude. So, Andrew, sorry about missing the party. And next time, I'll come pick you up. Probably not in Phoenix. I'll have to pick you up. I'll pick you up at the airport. We'll make real sure you get to the next fest. Now it's time. I look at my watch. Oh, geez, plane takes off at 7 o'clock. Oh, geez, it's almost 6. Oh, geez, we're in Scottsdale, which is not near the airport. It's almost 6. Plane leaves at 7. Oh, my God, oh, my God. Out of there, goodbye, goodbye. Jump in this monster-ass 40-foot Nissan truck, and we're barreling there towards the airport. And then I remember the damn gas. I got like quarter tank, and I know they're going to screw me to death. They're going to, whatever, $9 a gallon if I show up with anything less than a half a tank. So I stop and get gas, and I had to get there as fast as I could without screwing up. Finally got to the airport. Oh, got to say one thing. Halfway between Sedona and Scottsdale for the appointment, I remember we didn't print out our boarding passes. We pulled over to a Hampton Inn and said, hey, we're not staying here, but do us a favor. We got to have these boarding passes. So can you help us out? I said, sure, no problem. So shout out to Hampton Inn. If you're ever in some town, need a hotel, I recommend the Hampton Inn. Okay, so barreling towards the airport, we get there. The check-in guy for the Enterprise Rent-A-Cars, Mr. Magoo, is like, I'm never going to rent Enterprise again, please. And sorry, this trip report went on so long, but if I didn't tell you the story, I couldn't deduct the expenses for the weekend. And with the limited income I have, I need to deduct everything I can. I have before me a correspondence printed in a local paper. Where to draw the line on story balance? This is about gay and being gay and gay rights and all things gay. I envy the young people portrayed in USA Today's article, Gay Teens Coming Out Earlier to Peers and Family. It would never have been possible for me to come out when I was in high school in the 70s. It's also gratifying that the growing number of gay-straight alliances in high schools are providing these courageous young people with the support and affirmation they need. I never have been a gay teenager, but can you just imagine what that's like to feel so different from everybody else? These Fast Times at Ridgemont High or, Veronica Mars, I guess there's 100 examples of teen angst. But almost all those shows are about normal, well-adjusted, everyday teens trying to make it through the hellhole that is high school. But think what it's like to be the only black guy in school. Chris Rock talked about that. Howard Stern talked about being the only white kid in his school. Think what it's like to be the only one of your kind. Or if you're gay, say there's 2 or 3 gay people in your whole high school that are willing to come out, that are willing to discuss it. Think how lonely that must be. That's just got to be the most heartbreaking thing. High school already. I was okay in high school. I cracked a lot of jokes and I just made it through somehow. But high school's tough enough without having that extra burden of being gay on top of you. And then on top of that, you've got all these religious crazies standing around screaming at you. You're of the devil. You need to burn. Yeah, we can't all be Reverend Ted. But there's always a problem because there are Republicans in this country. That was me speaking. Yet while opposition to such alliances is worth noting, I have to wonder whether it was necessary to quote from the Family Research Council's Peter Sprigg, who insists that, quote, homosexuality is harmful to society, close quotes. Well, I agree. Homosexuality is harmful to society in the way that brown eyes are, and that being tall is, and that being female is. If a black high school student had organized an African-American studies group Would it have been necessary to give voice to a local representative of the Ku Klux Klan in an effort to appear fair and balanced? Says Chuck from Spring Hill, West Virginia. Chuck has a good point. But I love the way the guy compared the KKK to the religious crazies, because both organizations are built on hate. The Klan can't raise any money without hate. They hate the Jews, they hate the blacks, they hate the foreigners, they hate any. Oh, Catholics are in there. Go figure. We Catholics, they don't like. But these groups that are built on hate, they're bad. We need to get rid of them. Organized religion, bad. Klan, bad. Republicans, bad. It'd be nice if we could build some organizations on something besides hate. Like the Democrats, they built their organization on stupidity and timidity. Wouldn't it be nice if we could... It'd be nice if the Democrats had a little more sack and the Republicans had a little less hate. That would be a perfect world. Things aren't always perfect, so we're going to have to overcome.
Join us in a song. We shall rise and sing. Stand up and be counted. Sing a song for liberty. Join us in this song.
My good friend Rich has fixed me up with a bunch of sound clips. He appears willing to do this on a regular basis. And isn't it funny, now that we've gone from the two-hour shows to the one-hour shows, now I find myself with too much show. It just kills me. But one of the recent clips he sent me was the Vulgar Pig Boy. Oh, I love the Vulgar Pig Boy clips, because there's nothing easier to refute than the Vulgar Pig Boy. And here Rush is explaining why it's okay if we're losing 20 men per weekend in Iraq, because... why, there's murders in Detroit and Philly and Miami and Dallas. So what's the big deal about losing 20 soldiers per weekend in Iraq?
We're concerned with death here. We're concerned with body counts.
What a pompous prick this pig boy is. Acting like, oh, we've come down from the mountain with a great declaration that... You know, Rush, have you ever thought about speaking into the microphone as though you were talking to a human being? Instead of this, oh! What a hand job the pig boy is.
We're concerned with the breakdown of law and order. We're concerned with insurgencies, gangs, whatever you want to call them. They're out of control in major American cities, and Philadelphia is just one example. And where are the hearings on this?
But pig boy, this crime wave didn't develop since January 4th when the Democrats took over. The city's been out of control for, oh, I don't know, say 12 years. When the Congress was run by you monkeys. Why are you upset now? Democrats have had control, what, 5 weeks? And you expect them to clean up all the crime in America that the Republicans refused to address when they were in total complete control for, what, 4 or 5 years? Gee, it's almost like you're lying, you pig boy.
Oh, I know. Senator Biden and Speaker Pelosi are too busy trying to weaken the commander-in-chief, so we can't win the war in Iraq.
What does that mean? Pig boy. Oh, God, I should be rich by now. I should go back to the RushLimbaughLionNaziWhore.com and just go after you. That'd be so much fun. But what does this mean, Biden and Pelosi prevent Bush from winning the war? How did they do that? They just got there. The war's 4 years old. They've been in power 5 weeks. Pig boy, explain yourself.
They are not only invested in defeat, they can't allow victory. They sit politically, they cannot allow it.
But Rush, what does that mean, they can't allow it? Can you explain yourself? You're supposed to be this big communicator. What the hell are you saying, Rush? Why can't they allow it? What tells you that they can't allow it? Break some clues off of that fantastic mind that you always brag about. Can't you explain anything?
406 Philadelphians murdered last year.
And Rush, I have to ask, who is in charge of the government last year? That would be you guys. Remember how you always like to brag? You have the White House, you had the Senate, you had the House, you had the courts, you had the military, you had the judges, you had everything. And now you're explaining how bad things were in 06. Pig boy, are you confessing your party's sins?
Unbelievable. We have lost just over 3,000 soldiers in Iraq in nearly 4 years. About 600 of those were due to non-combat accidents. There were 821 deaths in Iraq. troop-related deaths last year, 406 in one American city. And consider the media attention.
But, Rush, what's your point? Is there a point you're trying to make? Is this one of those deals that since you're on for 3 hours, you have to take the whole 3 hours to make a damn point?
We hear about how out of control Baghdad is. We hear about how nobody can control it, and Bush can't control it, and the U.S. military can't control it.
The reason they can't control it is because we have 130 or 140,000 soldiers over there, and a handful of them are in Baghdad. The other 100,000 are guarding Bush's pipeline. That's why we can't control it. Do you think if we put 130,000 Marines into Philadelphia, you think there'd be a lot of murders? You think there'd be a lot of crime in the streets? I bet carjackings would fall to near zero. I'll bet car thefts would fall to near zero. Who knows about murder? I don't know what a soldier on the street can do when some guy shoots his wife. But as far as crime in the streets, pig boy, you don't think 100,000 Marines in Philly would calm that city down?
Let's get a little proportion and let's talk about the fact that it is not safe to walk in parts of our own American cities.
But pig boy, what does that mean? Whoever said it was? In what American city, since there's been an America, has it been safe to walk the streets in the middle of the night in areas that people like you keep poor because you won't hire the black man, you won't let a black man have a grant to college, you won't let a black man go forward in this society unless he starts screaming tax cuts and supply-side voodoo bullshit? Why don't you take some responsibility for the crime in the streets, because crime is caused by poverty. Even a monkey ought to know that.
Democrat-run cities. Liberal politicians.
But Rush, are you saying that Democrats are in power because the people trust them, the people elected them, the people voted for the Democrat, and so the Democrats got in power and now we've got trouble? I thought you said the Republicans and the conservative ideas were sweeping the nation and that liberalism was on its way out. How could all these liberals get power, Rush? Explain yourself.
The contrast in big media coverage, especially the TV networks, is sickening.
No. What's sickening is wall-to-wall Anna Nicole Smith coverage, and you never hear about the guys with their arms and legs and their balls blown off. You never hear those stories. Well, I mean, you can if you search them out. Watch the nightly news tonight. See how many minutes they spend on Anna Nicole. See how many minutes they spend on the Iraqi veterans maimed or dead because Bush got a hard-on for some oil that wasn't his. That's what's sickening.
If we were to follow the way Democrats want to deal with Iraq...
Hey, pig boy, I got a question for you. What is this? Are you snorting your OxyContin now, Rush? Oh, just a few minutes, and that's the second big snort you've done on the air. Don't you have a snort button on your console there, pig boy, when you're about to snort something? Can't you press that little thing down and then do your line and then let it go and go back to what you were lying about?
And apply it to how we should deal with Philadelphia and other crime-ridden big cities. We should do the following.
Rush, you're a nutty, nutty hand job. Baghdad is not Philly. There was no reason for any of us to be in Baghdad. Philly is where Americans live. We're supposed to be there. We're not supposed to be in Baghdad. What the hell is wrong with your brain, boy? Did you snort yourself into stupidity?
Cut off all federal funding for Philadelphia.
No, that's what people like you and Reagan and Newt and Grover Norquist and all these other idiots, that's what they want to do. They want to cut off all help to the neighborhoods that are overrun by crime. Remember Clinton's 100,000 cops? He put them on the street and you start screaming, oh, it's a waste of money. But crime dropped a whole bunch. But when you're super rich, you need that extra $10 in your pocket more than you need fewer murders in Philadelphia.
Withdraw all federal agencies and FBI offices, any federal law enforcement. Get them the hell out of there by 2008 so Hillary Clinton doesn't have to deal with it when she's inaugurated in January of 2009.
But, pig boy, what does any of this have to do with Bush lying to get us into a war in Iraq? My God! Remember how when we had the 18 down in Somalia, you went nuts for months because there was 18 dead people and Clinton didn't even send them over there. Now we got 3,100 dead people and you say, well, there's dead in Philly too. How come you're not worried about that? The Baghdad situation is what your boy lied us into for no reason.
It sounds to me like there's a civil war going on in Philadelphia and in other major American cities, and we ought not be in the middle of it.
Pig boy, you are so stupid, and you're such a liar. The Civil War in Philly, what does that mean? You're making shit up now, and the stupid people might fall for it. Ain't working here, Rush, because I got an IQ of 64. I can answer any bullshit lie you throw at me. The Civil War in Philly. How stupid are you? We got Sunnis killing Shia over in Baghdad, and you said it wasn't a civil war. In Philly, we got poor people trying to survive, some of them having to resort to crime because they can't get a job. Uneducated, black, criminal record. No one's going to hire someone like that. So yeah, they might steal some food for supper. They might deal some drugs to try to get ahead. That's not a civil war, pig boy. That's poverty. And you're one of the main people who wants to kill any kind of government program that'll help a black man. You go right to hell.
We need a resolution from the United States Senate which forces President Bush to remove all federal presence from Philadelphia and now.
But Pigboy, you already said that. It didn't work the first time. Why are you repeating it? It's just horseshit. Are you of the mind that if you repeat horseshit enough times, it eventually becomes true? Does that mean your middle name is Goebbels?
Soldiers dying in a war zone is one thing, but citizens in a civilized American city being murdered at the rate of 406 a year, speaking of Philadelphia, in one city, we lose half as many American citizens, innocent lives, as troops dead, not all on the battlefield either, in Iraq. Where's the concern for the dying in Philadelphia?
Rush, I think you hit onto something here. Let's take the soldiers that we got stranded in that desert hellhole half a world away and bring them back here and put them in Philly. You got it, Rush. That's a great idea. Screw Baghdad. Screw Iraq. Screw Fallujah. Screw all those little towns. Let's bring our boys home and police our own cities.
Where's the concern for the dying in Detroit, Chicago, Miami, Houston, Dallas, New York, Boston? Take your pick.
You got something there, Rush. Let's bring those troops home and let them patrol. Hell, they could patrol the border, too. That'd be a good idea, right? We could bring home those 130,000 troops, have them guard the cities, have them guard the border. Well, that's a great idea, Rush.
Where is the concern for the death and the dying? Where are the resolutions? Where are the demands that we train local security forces to deal with this?
Big boy, you're repeating yourself again. We've already been through this. Clinton did that. He put 100,000 extra cops on the street, and you threw a fit. You said that's wasteful. There was no need for it. You said it was a horribly bad idea. And now that Clinton's gone and we got an incompetent monkey in there murdering people at will for no reason, now you're wondering about the safety of America. Yeah, we agree. Clinton had it right the first time. Instead of sending men over to Baghdad to be murdered, why don't we send them into our cities and clean shit up? Good thinking, Rush. You're finally where Clinton was back in 1995. You're only 12 years behind.
Where are the threats from our great fearless leaders in Washington to get out?
Rush, what are you talking about? Threats to get out? Is that syphilis really just chewing on your brain? What's wrong with you? Why can't you think? What are you asking for? Where are the threats? What does that mean, Rush? Can you write it down? Can you say the same thing in different words so we have a chance to make a what the hell you're trying to say?
I'm sure we got military installations in many of these cities. Our troops are at risk in our major cities.
Our troops are at risk in our major cities? No, they're not, Rush. What's wrong with you? It's been so long since you said anything that was non-retarded. Don't you have a clue, Rush? Can't you speak to us like you're an adult and we're adults? What do you mean the troops aren't safe in our cities? You think if they send 20,000 Marines into Philly, they're going to get picked off one by one? By who, Rush? By the Philly Civil War that doesn't exist? What is wrong with the pig boy?
We have National Guard members. We have reservists in all these cities. They are at risk. Senator Spector, in your hometown.
There you go again, Rush, just repeating nonsense again and again. Who is going to put our troops at risk if they go to Philly? You think there are snipers all over Philly like there are in Baghdad? You think the people in Philly got nothing better to do than to bury a bunch of bombs in the street so when a soldier walks by, they can blow them up? That's not going to happen. You idiot.
Have you no concern for the possibility they might die on the streets of Philadelphia?
So you put a yes-no question to me. I'm going to say no. I don't have any concern that the Marines are going to be murdered if they go to Philly. I'll give you an absolute no on that one, Rush. Is that what you're looking for? Some clear answers? The answer's no. Our troops are safe in Philly.
You see how bogus this whole argument is?
I couldn't agree more if you were Shirley with some Chinako in one hand and some good pot in the other. I so agree with that, Rush. This is so stupid. You are the biggest hand job ever to get behind a microphone. You make no fucking sense ever. You make a million times more than I make, Rush. And I make all the sense in the world. You don't make a goddamn bit of sense ever.
On get the troops out now because they're dying for nothing.
In Baghdad, yes. In Fallujah, yes. In Tikrit, yes. In Sadr City, yes. In Basra, yes. In Philly, no. Not ever. Have we lost a soldier in Philly since the Philadelphia experiment in 1943, Rush? Oh, goddamn, this is so much fun. I think we can expect to see more Bart versus Rush clips in future radio shows. Thanks to Rich for sending these to me. See, this is all I ever needed. I could do hours and hours a day if someone else just could find the clips and put them together for me, and all I got to do is slap the pig boy around. I can do this for breakfast.
What an insult to them.
Well, more than an insult. You know, when you take away a man's legs, when you take away the man's eyes, you take away his private parts. There was a picture on the, let's see, it's Bart Cop 1925, I think. It's so sad. There's a picture of a Marine getting married. All the skin on his head is burned off. He's got no ears. He's got no eyebrows. He's got no hair. And he's standing there proudly in his Marine uniform marrying a beautiful girl. And I feel bad for this girl. I know she loves her man. But if it had not been for Bush's hard-on for someone else's oil, she'd be marrying a handsome Marine with all the skin on his body that God gave him. That's an insult. Taking a man's memories away. It was a story in yesterday's, I think it was 1924. Guy comes home. He's got pieces of bone and shrapnel and everything else in his brain. He talks like he's mentally challenged. He can't think. His emotions run out of control. That's an insult, Rush. Not to suggest that we pull him out of a quagmire. That's a good thing. What's wrong with you? And, Pigboy, when you had a chance to serve, you told the recruiters that your butt was too dirty to get in. Funny that you're so for this war, but when you had a chance to serve, you just couldn't quite get there. But when it's some other poor son of a bitch dying, you're all for it. If there was a God, you'd burn in hell for all time, you son of a bitch.
My point is not to diminish the 821. My point here is to, A, illustrate for you how you may be in the process of being brainwashed, propagandized, or manipulated by the drive-by media who want you to believe that many are dying every day.
Not sure what the syphilis-addled brain was trying to say there, but if anything, the reports of the dead and wounded from Iraq are being downplayed by the media because, well, to some degree, they get a pass because all they can do is report what the government tells them. And we've heard this before, and we can't get any confirmation on it, but the way we hear it, if a soldier gets a bullet in the brain and his heart is still beating when they put him on the truck, then that's not considered a combat death. And we just don't know what the true figures are. They're going to wait until after the war, and then they're going to tell us we've got 100,000 men with brain injuries. We've got 80,000 amputees. We've got 400,000 or 500,000 with post-traumatic stress. They're going to wait till after the war is over, and then they're going to say, oh, the war was so costly. Well, people like me are saying, why don't we address the cost now? Why don't we go after it now? Why wait until another 3,000 die? Why wait until another 30,000 are maimed? Why wait until another 200,000 get the post-traumatic stress syndrome? Why wait, Rush?
You're not getting the truth from the drive-by media.
You're damn right, because they're dependent on the government, and we know the government's lying because it's run by a Bush.
The second thing is to try to put some perspective in all this with ways in which Americans die while not at war.
What does it matter? If these men are dying overseas, it's not in place of people who are dying at home. If we got 40,000 deaths in America, and when you count the 1,000 we lost in Iraq, that's 41. This is not a zero-sum gain, Rush. We've got X amount who are going to die in America no matter what. And you're acting like the 3,000 have died in Iraq is of no consequence. Fuck you, Rush.
Wouldn't you say that if 821 Americans out of a troop force of 150,000 died in 1 year, haven't worked up the percentages on this, but you might have a better chance at living going to war than living in certain cities where the crime rate's out of control.
This reminds me of a Marine recruiter that we had on the Barkop Radio a few shows back. He's trying to talk some poor young idiot into signing up, and he said, hey, you ever go to Subway? And the kid goes, yeah. He goes, you know, read in the paper the other day, man died at Subway. So, you know, you can die at the Subway, or you can die in Solder City. Either way, you know, your number's up, the good Lord will decide. So, all things being considered, you might as well join the Army and go to Solder City, because you can die there just like at Subway. And some people are so stupid, they're going to fall for that. Now, I don't know if I can really blame a 17, 18-year-old kid for falling for that. But here's the vulgar pig boy saying, it's okay if you die over there 8,000 miles from your wife and your kids. It's okay. Because what if you died in America? See? So it doesn't matter how many thousands of soldiers die overseas. I think we ought to play this segment for our soldiers over there. Let them know how much Russia's behind them. It's okay that you're in Tikrit. It's okay that you're in Mosul. It's okay that you're in Fallujah, because you might die at home too. Hell, what if a meteor comes out of the sky and kills you? See? You could have been in Fallujah. But no, you wanted to stay home in Kansas. You got killed by a meteor or a car. So there's no reason to stop the war, is what Russia's saying. Everyone's going to die, so you might as well die in Fallujah. And remember to vote Republican next year.
I put this in context because the purpose of this war is to protect U.S. national security. This is not just about stabilizing Iraq.
Big boy, I'm glad to see you going down this path, because 70% of the voters disagree with you now. By the time the election rolls around in 20 months, that number is going to be up to 80 or 90. And I want you to keep saying that again and again, that this is about national security. It's not about Bush stealing the oil. No, no. The oil's got nothing to do with why we're over there. We're over there to protect ourselves. Even though we let Osama go, there's no reason for us to be in Iraq, and everybody agrees on that. The generals agree. A majority of Republicans believe that. Everybody believes that now, except for the neocons who are in power and Fox News and whores like Rush Limbaugh. They don't mind how many thousands of soldiers die. They have to be sure Bush looks good, so the tax cuts will continue, because people like Rush can't make it on $20 or $30 million a year. Tax cuts trump everything. Rush doesn't care if this is another Vietnam. That's okay with him, because they have to make Bush look good. So next time a Republican runs, he can say, I'm another Bush, and Bush is a genius, and Bush saved America. He knows he's lying, but he's got to have that tax cut.
This is Bart Cop Radio.
Well, there you had it. Bart Cop Radio, show number 106, is now in the can. Got half of Bart Cop Radio, show number 107. If I get that done, that'll be five shows in 30 days. Boy, that's what I call delivering the product. I'd like to thank the subscribers. I'd like to thank those who donated. I'd like to thank those who send the occasional check in the mail, because that doesn't belong to Caesar. You know how nobody likes Caesar these days. Caesar wants that money so he can go to war. Screw that. I'd like to thank Tommy and Tally. I'd like to thank Rich for providing those clips. So this is Bart in freezing Oklahoma, supposed to be a low of 17 tonight. Oh, please, Lord, don't ever give me what I asked for again. We'll see you again in a few days. This is Bart, and I'm out of here.
Here come the law that I'm